As part of our continuing focus in the topic of readiness, this week in the Leaders Huddle, we take a hard look at medical and personnel readiness. Joining us on the episode today is Captain Chris Barber, an active duty physician's assistant who served at the battalion level. During this knowledge-filled episode, Chris brings a lot of great information on how current serving commanders can leverage their battalion PA to improve their formation's medical readiness. This is a can't-miss episode. This is the Leaders Huddle podcast, episode number 44. Welcome to Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership professionalism and building high-performing organizations. I'm Captain Dave Wirt. It's been a while since we've recorded an episode, and I'm really excited today to just jump right into the material by interviewing Captain Chris Barber. After graduating from The Ohio State University in 1999, Captain Chris Barber enlisted as an 11 Bravo infantryman with subsequent assignments to 227 Infantry at Schofield Barracks, Hawaii. After completing a deployment to Afghanistan and a follow-on assignment at Fort Benning, Chris earned a commission through the Columbus State University ROTC program. He then attended the Inter-Service Physician Assistant Program at Fort Sam Houston in 2010. Chris Barber's assignments as a PA include the 11th Engineer Battalion, 3rd Infantry Division at Fort Benning, as well as the 14th Combat Support Hospital at Fort Benning, with operational deployments to Kosovo and Puerto Rico. Captain Barber has the experience as a family medicine PA, emergency medicine PA, and a clinic OIC. He is happily married to his wife, Kristen. They have 6 wonderful children and 3 rambunctious greyhound dogs. Chris, it's good to connect back with you from our days at 11th Engineer Battalion. Welcome into the Leaders Huddle for the first time. If you can fill any gaps with your bio, please go ahead and do that.
All right. Hey, absolutely. I'm really happy to be here, and it's great to catch back up with you. I think my bio pretty much speaks for itself. I have kind of a diverse background, about 10 years in the infantry on the enlisted side before commissioning, and then 7 years or so now as an officer, almost 8 years. And most of the time has obviously been as a PA, and I've had, a variety of assignments, and it leads me to have a good insight of what, my platoon leaders and commanders and battalion commanders need from a battalion PA. So I'm happy to be here and be able to provide some future commanders and young company grade officers with some insight on some medical readiness issues.
Well, thanks, Chris. So this episode is actually from a listener generated request on Facebook, where he asked us to reach out to some battalion PAs and how we could utilize them better. And as we know, the chief of staff has made it clear that readiness is the number one priority, and there is no other priority. And personnel, and specifically medical readiness, is an essential factor for deploying units' ability to conduct its deployed mission. And as a former commander, and for all our current and former commanders out there, we've all been through the tough USR or command staff brief of briefing our medical readiness and looking over at the PA to verify. So that's why I want to bring you on. I want to help clarify what the PAs do for the battalion. So for those that may not be familiar with what a battalion PA does day to day or what services they provide, please briefly explain the typical PA role and how they facilitate medical readiness at the battalion level.
All right, that's a great question. People who haven't had a lot of experience in the military, might not be familiar with the role of a PA. Essentially, you can think of anything your primary care, your family medicine doctor would have done back as a civilian or early in your military career is really how the Army utilizes the vast majority of PAs. Outside of, say, aviation units or special operations type battalions, we don't have enough physicians to go around to fill every single, force comm element with a day-to-day, DO or MD physician that's seeing patients on a daily basis. But every force comm unit, for the most part, is going to be provided a PA that's going to, do all those things. So basically, not just sit call stuff, but routine medical care, diagnosing, talking to patients, ordering medications, coming up with treatment plans, ordering, interpreting labs and imaging, and referring people to specialists and helping them make determinations on, surgeries and physical therapy, and all this stuff is, very commonplace, and PAs are well qualified to do all that. In addition, you know, because we are by and large, you know, about 80% of the Army PA population are in force comm units, we are also primary staff officers. You know, we actually get classified as special staff, just like your, you know, battalion chaplain would be. So we have direct access to the battalion XO and the battalion commander. We are really the battalion commander's subject matter expert on healthcare issues and medical readiness and deployability issues, probably even more importantly. You know, we also have a secondary role to provide the continuing education and, you know, SOP development of the medic platoon for all the combat medics. You know, we're technically by MTO, the medical platoon leader, although in the vast majority of cases, we would defer those duties to the, you know, 70 Bravo Lieutenant Meadow. You know, we do staff planning, writing op orders, doing, you know, development of courses of action and, you know, all that kind of stuff you would have from any staff section. And we are here as any staff officer really to help our, not just battalion commanders, but our company commanders be more successful and, you know, help navigate confusing issues for them as it relates to their soldiers' health and medicine and deployability and readiness.
Chris, I think that was a great summary. You actually answered a follow-on question as far as how you battalion PAs are different than medical officers or medical service officers, but I think your answer captured that pretty nicely. So transitioning on to my second question, how can commanders really at the company level leverage the battalion PA to improve their formation's medical readiness and ultimately help reduce the amount of non-deployable numbers that affect their readiness?
Okay, you know, that's an interesting question as well. So if you look at it, what do we say doctrinally, you know, MedPros is a commander's program. So as you know from your experiences at command and staff, so ultimately the readiness and deployability of the formation is going to fall on the company commander. But that being said, you know, realistically, you know, I consider that a team approach. And so what can a company commander do? And I think the first thing you need to do is not view your medical officer or your PA, your surgeon, whoever you have there on the team as an adversary. It needs to be really a team effort. We're not here to make your life, you know, more difficult. We're here to make you guys more successful. So I think you need to, as a new commander, you know, reach out, establish that communication dialogue. You know, if you're not speaking on a regular basis, you know, weekly, every other week, you know, have your battalion PA's phone number on speed dial and using it as a resource, then, you know, you probably should be. That's, you know, probably the biggest issue or the biggest way we can help is just leveraging the knowledge and the skill set and help you kind of figure out what people's, you know, long-term prognosis is, you know, what's the return to duty status going to be. You know, they're likely to be a med board. Are they likely to make a future deployment you maybe have on the calendar? You know, in terms of in the short term, if you've got, you know, med pros type readiness deficiencies, then certainly we're going to be the ones that maybe, you know, coordinate for a medical SRP event or do something at the clinic or see a patient for their PHA or, you know, get them their immunization. So if you're having difficulties through the normal channels, and I always tell my commanders, hey, you know, shoot me an email and let me know what your difficulties are because I can't solve problems for you that that I don't know about. You know, other ways you could leverage the battalion PA, you know, depending on your unit's MTO, you're probably going to have a medical platoon of some sort, and those medics might belong to HHC and the medical platoon on a permanent basis. But I would really, as a commander, I would push if you have the resources available to get those, you know, two or three line medics and maybe the company senior medic, you know, E5 and CO type attached, you know, detached from HHC and attached to your line company and let those guys really run point on your medical readiness issues. You know, commanders between mandatory training and 350-1 things and ranges and going to the field and command supply discipline and maintenance programs, they really have a lot of different things competing for their time. And so I understand that, you know, medical readiness, although it's extremely important, you might not have the time to really deep dive into it and manage it. So having those medics on the ground to do those things for you could, you know, be helpful. You know, another thing you could do is if you're not familiar with pre-deployment medicine and what we call like Mod 13 or the CENTCOM deployability standards, I'd get with your battalion PA and get a quick class and an over brief on, you know, what exactly is that pre-deployment medicine process? You know, what kind of things beyond profiles that we can see in med pros or shots that we can see in med pros are likely to keep people from being deployable? I always tell my commanders that you probably have this invisible 5 to 10% of your formation that you're not even tracking as having an issue. They're not flagged in med pros anyway. They don't have an e-profile, but they're probably for a variety of reasons not going to make it through a med SRP event and get on an airplane and go down range with you, or it's going to require a waiver process. So educating yourself on what those conditions are, maybe even getting a list of who the PAs track and that, you know, might have some issues based on their experience, and getting some education on what that process is or how likely their condition is to even get a waiver approved, you know, from the CENTCOM surgeon or the UCOM surgeon, which also uses Mod 13. I think that's, you know, obviously helpful. I think if your unit is doing monthly health of the force type meetings or, you know, medical deployment scrub type meetings, which they should be, company commander should be attending that absolutely with the medical officer and, you know, the battalion commander and sergeant major. So if you're not doing those kind of things, you need to be getting on those monthly meetings. If you're at a unit that's maybe not having that sort of program set up yet, then I would encourage you to reach out to the PA and get that on board. Cause that's probably, you know, besides command and staff, where you're seeing the PA every week or every other week, that monthly, you know, deployment go, no go, what's the issues, what's their status, is probably the biggest bang for your buck as a commander in terms of really getting a pulse of where you're at with your soldiers and, you know, what's their likely prognosis and, you know, return to duty status. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, if you really want to impact readiness, you know, commanders should aggressively pursue administrative separation of those soldiers that are ABC and Army fitness testing failures. Those guys tend to get injured more, unfortunately, and be non-deployable and can be a real drain on your overall unit medical readiness. So, you know, aggressively getting that paperwork in order, educating yourself with what's required administratively to separate those guys as a commander, and reaching out to the PA and, you know, making sure their chapter physicals and their mental health evaluations and all those things are done timely will go a long way in helping you, you know, overall work with your numbers and ultimately get you to the sort of percentage that's going to make the formation successful, make your boss happy, and make you a good commander.
So Chris, I'm feverishly writing notes because I'm like, man, I wish I had done several of these things as a company commander. But I think your point on attaching the 68 whiskeys, the only time I've really seen that was when we were deployed, and our 68 whiskey worked a lot straight with the Charlie Med of our BSB to set up appointments or routine shots that we need to get when we were downrange. That's a good idea. Some systems that I've seen personally that we used in our company was having a high-speed E5 has an additional duty as like our med pros in CO, and they would go through the HIPAA training, get access, or just work with the first sergeant so we could proactively project who was coming out of tolerance for, say, their hearing or dental or vision or whatever shots and get them to there. And fortunately, both my first sergeants were really squared away, and we had pretty good numbers. But I think I could wrap up a lot of stop me if I'm wrong here, but I think I could wrap up some of your points into having a very more proactive posture, just like training readiness or maintenance readiness, and rather than a reactive posture. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And as I always tell my commanders here that I'm working with, if you're constantly playing this game where you're waiting for people to come up as overdue for whatever, a shot, an annual PHA, a hearing, vision, whatever, dental, you're always going to be behind the power curve. Your stats are always going to look bad. You're always going to have all kinds of red at command and staff that's going to, you know, make the boss, you know, not very happy with you. And if you're doing it correctly, you should be really looking, you know, the people you're focusing on, you know, maybe today in the month of April are those soldiers that are going to have deficiencies in, you know, June, July. And so, yeah, being very aggressive and proactive, it not just stay on top of it, but really forecasting. And, you know, and I think your technique there of using an additional duty NCO from the company is just as valid if you don't want to or don't have the availability to get a whiskey attached. Certainly, you know, with with the administrative rights and portal, you can get those reports generated just as well. And I think that's a equally valid approach.
Okay, so speaking of the commander's portal, from my understanding, it's a relatively new tool. I haven't seen it since I've been out of command. Can you briefly describe what the healthcare and or commander's portal is, and how does it differ from the legacy MedPros or eProfile systems?
Yeah, that's easy. The current generation of the system we're using right now actually launched in February of this year, and it's termed the Medical Readiness Portal. And you know what that is it's sort of a collaborative effort of a few different things that we've been doing here. It's the commander's portal, it's the healthcare portal, it's the administrative portal, it's eProfiles and MedPros data. And you know, the bottom line up front on it, the bluff on this system is it's not doing a ton different than what we've done the past few years, but it's consolidated under one roof. So that you don't have to log in to multiple different, systems and access points to kind of mine that data. It is a little bit easier to use. If you're in the commander's portal specifically, it will, as you comb over your whole screen and put your UIC in, and usually it's set by default once you're a commander, it's going to give you an instant snapshot of everybody in your company that real time has deficiencies, what those deficiencies are. You can link and view their profiles right there. You can send messages to the profiling officer that wrote that profile if you've got concerns or questions or comments on the profile. You can get, graphs and trends of your readiness data from a historical perspective over, 30, 60, 90 days and 12 months, and track your trends. And really just it allows you to have maybe a better dialogue. It's easy as a commander for the most part to reach out and talk to your battalion PA if you've got an issue with, Private Smith's profile. But, that conversation is maybe more awkward or even impossible to do if you're trying to really, reach out and talk to the Lieutenant Colonel orthopedic surgeon that did your soldier's ACL repair. But this system, provides a very easy, effortless portal for you to, send out that communication. That colonel isn't familiar with the soldier's, job responsibilities or duties or an upcoming, FTX at JRTC or somewhere. And you can, have some dialogue with the profiling officer to see, hey, look, I know you wrote this or you wrote that, but is that an absolute thing or is that just sort of kind of your default language? And what do you think if we did this? Is it reasonable to, use that soldier within the limits of their profile, but still take them forward. And so you can get some exchanges back and forth. But the overarching part of it was to really create greater transparency for the commanders to really dial down and see what their issues are. And it doesn't really do anything that much different than the old MedPros and eProfile. It's probably a little more user-friendly. You don't have to necessarily go in and generate a bunch of different reports and create task force and things of this nature. Just it's a better graphical interface and a little bit easier to use.
Yeah, I personally found MedPros easier to use from a visual standpoint of statistics and colors as a very visual person than something like PBUS or LIW for our maintenance readiness. So I would, if you're a company commander out there and you're wondering like, how do I use this? One, talk to your PA, definitely get the HIPAA certification training, because that's one thing you can't drop the ball on is getting HIPAA certified and understanding the protected information when it comes to the medical information of your soldiers in your formation and the need to know basis. And working collaboratively with your first sergeant to maintain that medical readiness and creating it as part of your battle rhythm discussion of projecting those appointments. Like Chris was saying, if you're looking 3 months down the road and block leave is coming up and people are some of your soldiers are going to come up out of tolerance for said medical event, it's a good thing to get them to those stations before leave. So you kind of mentioned it, Chris, as far as talking about specific specialty providers, but how can commanders leverage battalion PA specifically to get information and help make decisions on their shoulders when it comes to specialty care, whether it's dermatology or even, you know, radiology or orthopedic surgeries that may take soldiers to inpatient for, you know, a couple days, or they may have to get referred to a, you know, higher level hospital specialty care like in Atlanta or somewhere else. How can we establish that dialogue, and why is it really important?
You know, for me, this goes back to sort of my theme of the evening. Is it's really about communication and dialogue. You know, a good PA that's, you know, responsive and to the unit's needs and to the commander's should have no problem at all entertaining an email or phone call, you know, from a commander. It's ultimately, you know, what we're here for. In terms of specifically how can we leverage them for specialty care? Well, the vast majority of referrals and, you know, consults, as we call them, you know, from the unit clinic, the TMC environment to the main post hospital to all post providers or specialty providers at the hospital is going to, you know, come through that battalion PA or the primary care manager. So we should have a pretty good feel on, you know, what someone's referral status is and why we're sending them there. You know, I think a great way to think about a PA is they should be your resource. You know, medicine is fairly complicated. It's complicated for those of us who are in it every day. And I can definitely appreciate that, you know, for a patient, you know, a young soldier or their commander that doesn't do medicine and isn't in it every day, how, you know, maybe you can get conflicting opinions or not have a very clear idea of what the treatment plan is. So if you're getting weird profiles back or sort of vague requests for surgeries or not sure about the timing of the surgeries or not sure, you know, why the patient's hospitalized, you need to reach out and you know, touch base with your PA and be like, hey, I've got this soldier. He's got this thing. You know, I've got this con leave request. Does he need this much con leave or, you know, do we have to do this surgery right now? Because I've got this, you know, NTC rotation coming up in 6 weeks. Is this something we could delay until after that? Or, you know, why was a soldier hospitalized? Or how long are they going to be in the hospital? Or, you know, how long, particularly for orthopedic surgeries, you know, how long is this soldier going to be really out of the game and be non-deployable and not necessarily be a, you know, a full functioning member of the team? But that's also good for us because, you know, in a perfect world, we would get, you know, a text message or something if one of our patients ends up in the hospitalized, if they get, you know, admitted to the inpatient psychiatric ward or they have to get emergency surgery. And oftentimes as a PA, we will find out about these things, but we'll find out days later. I get pretty good, reliable, you know, ER the next day. You know, Private Jones went to the ER last night, but the inpatient side of the house is a little bit lacking. So if a commander, squad leader, first sergeant, they will typically know these things pretty quickly because, you know, most of our soldiers and NCOs are going to communicate that information, you know, up the chain of command. And so, you know, I always tell guys, hey, look, you know, after you've briefed the boss, you've assessed the situation, probably your next call should be the battalion PA, get them in the loop, see if they can facilitate getting you better answers, explain things to you, kind of demystify, you know, some of the medical terminology. You know, they can help you with SIRs that you might just, you know, submit to brigade headquarters. You know, these are all things that, you know, we're here to help you guys with.
Hey, Chris, where do PAs come in the role into the med board process for soldiers? We kind of talked about it earlier as far as the separation, but unfortunately we got, you know, great Americans, great soldiers working hard, and they just can't get a medical issue that's resolved. Where do PAs help facilitate company commanders in the med board process?
So, you know, there is some variability, installation, but the vast majority of med boards are going to actually be initiated, you know, by the primary care manager, battalion PA type of role. So, you know, some installations, they can make that call on their own based on the medical evidence. You know, other installations, they want you to get a specialist to weigh in on the situation and have them make the call. But either way, how we arrive at that decision, you know, the PA is probably going to be the one that, you know, physically generates that P3 profile that initiates the med board and drop the referral over to the med board staff at the hospital and get that that soldier up there. So, you know, back to that health of the force thing we were talking about on ways, you know, commanders can leverage the PA. So, you know, I use a tracker, an Excel spreadsheet tracker that, you know, I've kind of created myself. You know, hopefully your unit's doing something. I provide it to all my commanders, but, you know, if you're not, you know, that you need to keep track of the status and have a pretty clear picture. You know, in today's Army, I always tell commanders, if you're not pending surgery or recovering from surgery, if, you know, your soldier reaches about 6 months or the 180-day mark of continuous profile time, we probably need to have a very solid reason why we're not referring that soldier to the med board. And so that's a very, very good sort of, you know, mark on the wall for you as a commander and say, okay, we can evaluate and do this, that, or the other thing and try different treatments. But if they're not better at 6 months, you know, there's probably not some magical thing that's going to happen for that soldier that's going to make them better at month nine. Unless, of course, like we talked about, they were, you know, a post-surgical patient and they're in rehab. You know, this is particularly going to be important with the new Department of Defense memo that came out. You probably read and heard about that last month, where essentially now we're going to give soldiers 12 months for really any reason or combinations of reasons of non-deployability time. And you know, this is going to be a double-edged sword. It's going to be great for commanders in a lot of cases, but there's also probably going to be some guys that are good soldiers and good Americans that we're going to, you know, probably have to refer to the med board, you know, based off of that, that 12-month window. It seems to be the mark that the DOD has set up and the Secretary of Defense. We're still waiting probably sometime later this month to get the actual, you know, detailed implementation instructions from MedCom and Department of the Army. But the sort of early feedback we're getting is this is by and large going to be a commander's program unless it's very clear, you know, Private Jones has been on the same profile for 12 months for his knee pain, then that's obviously going to be a med board. But this, you know, soldier you had that had 3 months of legal non-availability and 3 months of, you know, DentCat 3 and 6 months of ankle pain, that's going to be up to the company commanders to administratively separate the soldier. And it's probably going to be something like a Chapter 13 separation. So commanders who are, you know, in that role now and looking to take over command are going to have to come up with a system, you know, whether it's the monthly USR data or whatever they're using to cumulatively track and really be on top of how long their soldier's been, you know, non-deployable and out of the fight. And then it's going to be a fairly easy separation process from what I've been briefed so far.
Yeah, I was that's gonna be an interesting conversation. I'm like, you know, about two after ILE, about two years back or out from the operational force, so I can already imagine some of the, like, just the administrative battles or hurdles some of the commanders may come after. And I think it's good sound advice to probably tie in the battalion or brigade level legal on some of those tough cases or tough packets to make sure we're following the guidance directly. I'm glad I asked that question because I wasn't even thinking about bringing up the new DOD directive, but I know it was a hot button or will be a hot button issue in a couple months when we finally have the final guidance. Back on episode 19, we talked with an Army physical therapist about injury prevention and rehabilitation. I think this is a good question to follow up with you. Do you have any advice to offer in this area for the current commanders and platoon leaders out there who are planning and executing their PRT programs? And if at all, you know, why they should leverage the PAs when they're looking at their PRT programs?
Absolutely. This is been a topic of discussion around the office here for a while. I've actually lectured multiple times over at the Maneuver Captain's Career Course and given, you know, usually it's their last week or two of the POIs. These guys are out to, you know, pick up staff jobs or maybe even go right into command. And we have me and, you know, some of the staff physical therapists, we have kind of a medical readiness and injury prevention and profiling, you know, kind of primer that we're giving these guys. And surprisingly, you know, for groups of well-educated, you know, people and being able to point, you know, scientifically validated studies and guidance and Army policies, you know, there still is a significant amount of you know, pushback or resistance. I think culturally there's some things that, you know, I could tell you and we'll go into here in a second that would be really beneficial for a platoon leader or a company commander as they're designing their PRT program. But for a variety of reasons, you might have some obstacles in implementing those. One thing is I would say is, one, you've got to really be familiar with 7-22, and that seems like common sense, but I can tell you from talking to countless numbers of senior NCOs and officers that people have a very vague notion of what PRT actually is, and maybe some, preconceived notions about, the validity of the program and, what it represents or doesn't represent. But very few people have actually sat down and studied that with the same diligence that they would maybe an FM or AR that pertains to their AOC and their, their professional life. And so, if you're a commander or you're a platoon leader, we tend to, in many cases, let the first sergeant or the platoon sergeant just run these things. And I would say that that's probably not a recipe for success. I'm not saying you have to necessarily devise the PT program or go out there and lead, Monday through Friday PT, but you should understand what the Army's stance is and sort of guidance and philosophy and, do some spot corrections and looking over what your NCOs, particularly your squad leaders and team leaders, are doing on a daily basis and see if that really fits in, with the Army's philosophy on it. And then if they're not, if you're seeing things out there that you don't think are personally consistent with, what the Army's policy is on physical fitness training and things of this nature, then, that's a professional development opportunity, obviously. I would tell guys to look at really in 7-22, Chapter 5 and Chapter 10 are going to be your big money makers. Tables 5, 9, and 5, 10 are actually a daily 12-month calendar every single day for the year. It's already got 4-day holidays programmed into it every month. It's got a PT session by PT session, exercise by repetition, already pre-programmed. And so, I can recall back to when I was a platoon sergeant and have my first sergeant or commander ask me what my PT plan is. I don't think I would spend a lot of time if I were back in that position today trying to reinvent the wheel. I would photocopy those tables out of the FM and hand it to my boss and say, yeah, here, first sergeant, here, sir, this is my plan. I would send your NCOs to Master Fitness Trainer. We spend lots of money to make people very proficient at a wide range of skills. And then we just tell our NCOs to go out and lead PT, and they might or might not have that background or the skill set or the knowledge to effectively design a PT program. So send them to Master Fitness Trainer, have them dig into the manual. I think that's great. Things that I'm also, really harp on for injury prevention, and this is where I get the most amount of pushback. So if you really read the guidance and the studies, overtraining is what leads to the vast majority of our lower extremity energy injuries, probably a huge portion of the profiles. The regulations in the FM, the guidance says, hey, look, you should probably be running 3 days a week, running and or road marching 3 days a week or 5 days in a 2 week, 10 day period. You probably should be running no more than 20 to 40 minutes. So let's call that 2 to 4 miles. And that should be on, alternate, not successive days. And that really the long, slow distance run, that's something that's very near and dear to our Army culture and, formation running. These kind of things are probably the lowest tier priority of the runs, the intervals, the speed training, the hills running, the AGRs, all of this stuff is recommended to do at a higher priority. But yet I think across the Army, across formations, we still see guys, just going out and running in formation for probably excessive distances because that's what we've always done. Trying to brief the infantry commanders who, obviously had to do a 5 mile run at Ranger School, that there's really not a good reason to run more than 3 or 4 miles. It doesn't really make you a better combat fighter. It's not specific task oriented. It doesn't really decrease your 2 mile run time. And all it does is really injure people more. You don't get a lot of buy-in from that. And actually, we pulled the studies up from when they developed PRT that cutting running down to 2 to 4 miles, 3 days a week, people actually got faster by about 90 seconds on their average 2 mile run time. And it decreased their lower extremity injury rate and subsequent profiles by half, which to me is pretty evidence-based medicine that going out and running 5 to 8 miles, 3 days a week and then doing a road march and then doing, you know, some sprints on the fifth day, probably isn't battle focused training and really isn't the Army's philosophy on it. So, you know, if you want to train for your ultra marathon or do cross every morning, that's great. But probably the morning PT session is not, you know, the best use of that. But it's going to be a cultural change. We have a whole cadre of senior NCOs that grew up on a different PT system. Officers that don't want to get heavily involved in the nuts and bolts of the PT program. And, you know, people will badmouth PRT about how it's not effective. It's effective if executed correctly. And I would say it's probably more effective than whatever your random junior squad leader jotted down on a 3x5 card 7 minutes before the PT formation. You know, it's logical, it's progressive, it's sequenced. We spent a lot of money to develop the program, some very smart people. So I would say if you have never done it to standard, you should probably be incorporated and at least, you know, give it a shot. You know, other things that I think commanders can do when designing their PRT programs that they don't want to hear are really limit, you know, organized sports. And, you know, everybody loves sports and people like to be competitive in the military. And I appreciate that. But if you look at it, very few people get injured going out and doing, you know, 2 mile runs on flat ground. You know, people get traumatic injuries that require surgery because they've done, you know, contact sports and jumping and
or basketball, or right? Basketball. Wasn't basketball the biggest? I thought I heard somewhere that it was the biggest contributor to non-combat related injuries for people being sent home from deployment.
Yes. Absolutely. And I got everybody wants to get the Division Commander's Cup and everybody likes to play Ultimate Frisbee, but it's, you know, it's all fun and games until your company XO is taken out of the fight for 9 months when he tore his ACL playing Frisbee. And then I don't know if that is really worth it at that point. And so commanders definitely don't want to hear that, yeah, but it's true, unfortunately. And then the last thing I would say, and this is definitely a huge cultural shift, but there's really good evidence, is take a hard look at your soldiers and their tobacco use, not just cigarette or, you know, cigar use, but, you know, smokeless tobacco, which is very, you know, ingrained culturally in many soldiers. But there's absolutely very solid evidence that shows that, you know, nicotine consumption delays or seriously degrades the body's ability to heal. So those soldiers who are already injured have that much more difficult time rehabbing those injuries. There's a huge correlation between these chronic back pain patients. Oh, by the way, chronic back pain is the number one reason we med board people by far in nicotine use. And so, you know, obviously commanders don't want to trample on soldiers' rights. I understand that, but, you know, encouraging people to do smoking cessation, you know, maybe having strict policies when you go to the field about, you know, not using tobacco, maybe establishing, you know, tobacco-free campuses around the workplace. I don't know. These are all ideas I have, but we would be serving our soldiers, you know, much better if we could, you know, really, you know, stop selling tobacco products at the PX and really culturally make a shift away from these type of things. But that's, you know, people on some level understand that, but, you know, it's a very difficult thing to implement.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, I got to agree with you on a bunch of the things you said. I mean, the long, slow distance formation run is a sacred cow in the Army. And we were here listening to a guy named Matt Larson, who's basically the founder of the new Modern Army Combatives Program. And he made a suggestion that the reason we do those runs is because we don't want to be the guy or gal who falls out of the battalion and brigade level run and face that social pressure. I mean, maybe that I could agree to him to a certain point, but he the point was of the functionality of those long, slow distance runs is just it's a cultural carryover that shows very little, I think, benefit from a cardiovascular standpoint with a high risk and overuse injury. My wife happens to be some of the research that's going into how step rate and stride length can affect your injury. But to your last point, and we're kind of close on the time here, but I think to your last point as far as the tobacco use and just overall, I think it comes down to leaders modeling healthy living for their soldiers. That goes a far way in trying to show a balanced life, healthy diet, stress reduction, balanced workouts. I mean, if we're just running or if we're just going to the gym 5 days a week, we're not really balanced in that aspect. And I think that's important for us to remember from platoon leader on up to the battalion, you know, brigade commanders.
Yeah, I mean, I totally concur with everything you said. And I think they're really solid points. And yeah, I think we'll get there. I think, you know, we're better now than we were in 1997. But still, it's the changes aren't going to come probably as quick as I'd like them to. But I think we'll
Chris, I really want to thank you for your time. Before I let you go, I'd ask you, you provided a lot of good, solid points. This is definitely one of our strongest interviews that I've had in a long time. I'd ask you if you could just point our listeners to some further resources, books that I'll definitely capture in our show notes on the Junior Officer Forum, and then in the podcast notes for this show. And then at the end, just let our listeners know how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've already dropped some resources in the show notes. But you know, I put a link in there for the medical, you know, readiness portal. You can go right to there. I've put a link in there for a couple different articles on both the healthcare portal and the commander's portal to give some more detailed background information. I've put links to Army PRT on there, which I think is a non, you know, doctrinal, non-military site, but it's got a wealth of information on how to design and implement a PRT program. It's got, you know, videos of all the exercise. It's got great information on Chapter 6 on how to structure a, you know, rehab-based special populations and APFT failure programs as well. And I think it's a great website that, you know, I probably use once or twice a week for information. And then the last thing I've dropped on there, and although it does not necessarily speak straight to medical readiness, it's a great, you know, it's got a medical flavor to it, but it's a great podcast that came out last year. And it's just one episode. The entire series of the podcast is from the Special Operations Medical Association, and they've got four-day episodes right now, and most of them are focused on specific aspects of prolonged field care, or as we move forward in the new fight of getting away from the golden hour medevac, which is probably going to be a reality. But there is one lecture. It's Winning in a Complex World under the SOMA Prolonged Field Care podcast. It's 40 minutes. It's really kind of life-changing for me. And it's geared towards commanders, and it's just 40 minutes of thought provocation of the future battlefield and how to utilize medical resources and planning factors and lots of different scenarios for you to think about in terms of what happens when you're a platoon leader and you're in an immature theater, for instance, and that medevac bird's not going to come for 12 hours and you've got to stop movement because you can't move your casualty. And so it's just a all around excellent podcast. And I think that, you know, every officer should listen to it, but particularly any officer that's in command or in, you know, in S3 operations planning type purpose, because these immature theaters are likely to be the battlefield of the future and or, you know, near peer type fights where we might not have air superiority and the ability to, you know, fly casually out every 30 minutes. So I would strongly encourage everybody to take a listen to that one.
And we'll definitely provide the links to everything, and I need to check out that episode. So, Chris, how can the listeners to the podcast check you out on social media?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at BuckeyeGrad1999, and then I've provided a link for my Facebook profile. It is Chris Barber, but there are lots of us on Facebook, so I have a link in the show notes if somebody wants to look me up. And I'm always up to talk medicine and deployability and prolonged field care and medical readiness. These are all, you know, deployment issues and disaster response are all things I'm pretty knowledgeable about and very passionate. So, you know, people can find me on Global too, and shoot me an email or call the office, and I will make time for just about anybody and get them pointed in the right direction.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I really appreciate your time. I'm sure all our listeners will benefit a lot from this episode. This is one of those sort of specialty topics that's incredibly important that I don't think gets discussed enough. So from all of the Leaders Huddle listeners and the Leaders Huddle production team, thank you so much. And I'm going to close out with a few notes, but is there anything last you want to say to our audience?
No, I've been really excited to to be part of this. I've done lots of, you know, educational things for the Army for different audiences. And, you know, I love to teach and educate and just make people all around, you know, more successful at their job. So thank you for having me.
So thanks, Chris. This wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. In the next couple episodes, we've got an episode focused on the FLET program, of how you can transition to become an Army JAG officer, as well as some tips for PCS, because PCS season's right around the corner. You can always check us out on Twitter. If you've got an episode suggestion, hit us up on Twitter or at our Leaders Huddle Facebook page. And as always, we're on iTunes. Really appreciate the ratings and reviews. Definitely helps grow the audience. And until next time, get out there and make a difference in your organization. This is the Leaders Huddle Podcast, signing off. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle Podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.